Okay, thank you, members. Welcome to the Policy and Governance Committee meeting of Antrim Newton Abbey Borough Council on Tuesday, the 8th of January 2019. Members are reminded that this meeting is being audio recorded, and it is therefore important to ensure that your microphone light is switched on correctly before any comments are made and switched off when you have finished speaking. In order to avoid disruption to proceedings, may I request that everyone present ensures all mobile and electronic devices are switched on to silent mode. So, firstly, I'd like to welcome Councillor Wilson to his first meeting. You're very welcome. And just to thank Councillor Lynch for her contribution to this committee. And you will be missed, but we welcome Councillor Wilson, so thank you for your time. Are there any apologies?
Councillor McWilliam.
Thank you.
And Councillor Fraser New.
Okay, thank you.
Alderman Fraser New.
Thank you. Any others? Okay, item number two then, declarations of interest. Everybody okay? Okay, so item number three on the agenda is a presentation on the new website and citizen app. So I'd like to welcome Nicola McCullough, Catherine Piper and Graeme Smith. And we'll hand over to you now. Thank you.
Thank you. So today we'd just like to do a brief presentation on the website. We've been working on the website now for quite a number of months, and we're making progress, and you'll see at the end our plans as to when to go live. So just to give you a quick overview, Catherine Piper's going to talk. She's an independent consultant that has been working with us, and she's going to talk about, just give you an overview of the website itself, look and feel, and some background, some stats on how we've come up with certain parts of the website. But in terms of design, the website, our focus has always been to be customer orientated. So it's about customer behaviour and how people use the internet now. We looked at our analytics whenever we were designing the new site to see what areas were most popular. We looked at examples of best practice and online behaviour, and people, as Catherine will tell you a bit more detail about in a second or two, are using their mobile phones more and more. And their behaviour online is different to what it would have been a few years ago. We had workshops with internal stakeholders, so all the different sections within council were represented, and they put their opinions forward as to what it was that they needed from the site. And then we had Simply Zesty, who is the service provider that is actually building the site for us. They have a user experience specialist who would have looked at industry practice and also work with us in terms of what it was that we needed in their customer. So Catherine has been a linchpin between us in making sure that the process went smoothly. She's been working with us from about November time, and she's in with us a few days a week, and she's an independent consultant coming from working with companies such as Tourism NI, Visit Belfast, Power NI and Slidrobe. So she's extensive experience, and certainly we have benefited from that. So Catherine's just going to take us through the actual site itself now.
Thanks very much, Nicola. Thanks for having me along today. So I'd like to take you through the website. This is actually the live prototype of the website. It's still a work in progress, so you may see a few things there that aren't 100% right, but they will be by the time it goes live. So I'm not sure if you're, I'm sure you're all very familiar with the existing website, so this is a really big difference in terms of look and feel. So we've kept to the council branding and made sure that everything falls in line with what your users need. And as Nicola said, in terms of stats, you get about 50,000 visitors to the website every month. So that's quite a high percentage of people who are looking for information about the borough. And within that, 61% of those users in 2018 were on their mobile phones. So it's been really important that we take that into consideration when we've been designing the new site. That was the average of 2018, but actually in December, that went up to 67%. So it just shows us how more and more people are using their mobile to access information, and it needs to be there quickly. So you'll see here the main elements of the website is split into a number of sections. So we've got residents, council, leisure centres, events, visitor information, business and contact. The reasoning behind the structure of the site is based on the most how people use the site. So most people, 18% of people will come in and look at the residence section. And about 7% are coming in looking at council, and then the rest are sort of looking at things to do and leisure. So it was really important to take that into consideration. What we've also done is asked the digital forum, the council's focus group, for their feedback just to validate our thinking on what should go where. And that's currently in consultation with a number of independent people throughout the borough. So the site is very search-led. Again, in terms of user behaviour, this is quite common that you'll have a lot of people who will come and just search for something immediately. We've allowed people to search site-wide from the top right-hand side, but also straight away from the homepage. This is a predictive search, so as they start to type in, we will start to propose search results back to them, like you would in Google. We also have elevated the apply, report and pay items on the site as well, just to allow people to completely self-serve, go in and complete the actions that they need to. We've, in addition to that, we've included an interactive map. This will be populated with all of the key elements of things to do, event places, all the information that is on the borough, so people can look at it in a map view as well as an informative list. We have elevated the bins section because it is one of the most viewed pages on the website. And we have also pulled out what are the top pages that most people will visit and allowed an entrance straight into those areas from the homepage. Surprisingly, only about 7% of your traffic actually go to the homepage. So what we'll find is that actually a lot of people will go straight into the section that they were maybe looking for. So it is still important to make sure that we can give them as many entry points as possible. We have a latest news section, and we also have the ability to highlight an event. So if that's a key event that's running in the borough or something that you want to inform people of, it can be placed here. And then we have all the upcoming events prior to the date. So whatever's coming post this date will appear in the upcoming events section. All of your events and news are tagged. So we can say if it's a tourism event or a tourism piece of news or if it's a residence piece of news. And throughout the website, only those relevant pieces of information will show to the user. So if you're on the residence section of the website, you will see residence news. So we're just trying to make everything very relevant to all of your users. At the bottom of the homepage, then, we have a sign up. So obviously we want to encourage people to join our newsletter so we can keep them informed about what's going on. And we also have links out to your social media. One of the elements that we also have is the ability to have an alert showing on the site. So if there's a piece of urgent information like a road closure or some extreme weather warning, we can elevate that onto any page on the website, but particularly onto the homepage where it will have a lot of prominence. The site is completely responsive as well. I'll show you a view sort of later on in the presentation of how it looks on a mobile and how it looks on a tablet, but we've been very keen to keep it mobile first in mind due to the levels of traffic. So I'm just going to demonstrate how the bin checker works. It is one of your most popular sections of the site, so we've brought it to the fore where it's like I'm just going to refresh this. Give me a second. So there you can see the alert actually, that this is how the alert would appear on the site, and then it can be closed. Obviously when there's nothing to be alerted about, it would look as it does now. So if you search with your street name, your next bin collection date will come up immediately. So prior to now, you probably had about 4 clicks to get your next bin date, and now you get it straight away. You can also then go in to see your full bin schedule. So this will show you the next upcoming bin dates and the bins that are being collected. And then you can scroll on down to find more information about the bins and recycling section of the site. This map here will actually show what amenities are near you based on the information you've provided. So we've been able to encompass a level of personalisation onto the site. We're not being invasive with anyone's data. It's just based on a street name. So we're able to personalise that experience to show, okay, this is what's around you. What we've also done then is pull in who your councillors are within your what DEA you sit within. So we're informing the customer as well into what's happening based on where they are. And then we have news stories as well that can come in based on what's happening in their area. So the bin schedule can then be, you can go on to more dates or you can look at less dates as well. So there's plenty that you can look at. I'm going to take you now into the planning section of the site. It's also quite a popular area on the website. So at the moment, we're working on migrating a lot of content across, but we're working on the format of how that will look. Planning applications, obviously you have quite a lot of documents on the site, so we've been really looking at how do we make that all more user-friendly for people to access this information. So if we go into, for example, your weekly applications, we've just revised how that would be displayed to your customers in line with the new branding and just a much fresher look and feel. Another key area of the site is obviously your leisure centres and your leisure facilities. We've incorporated a little bit more of the Moore branding at this point, so it's very consistent with what users would see offline. So if they're in a leisure centre, they're going to see a little bit more of the blue and the orange, and just brings that together. Moore membership is obviously very important in terms of recruitment, so we have this lovely banner area, and that particular banner can be placed on any page on the website. We have a lot of really good functionality where we can chop and change. Again, it's bringing in latest news, and that would be leisure-related and leisure-related events as well. So I'll just pop into the Valley Leisure Centre section. So once we're into the Leisure Centre, you'll see it's just bringing it to life a lot with photographs. We're pushing people or encouraging people to click on to find out about the Moore membership, bring into the four opening times, and an outline of the facilities that are available. So we have little tabs here where you can click through and look at everything that's available in that leisure centre. On the old site, that maybe would have been 10 pages, but we've sort of concised everything up and presented it in a really nice way. You'll also get your location and, again, any news or events that are related to that particular location, so for the Valley Leisure Centre. So when we're pushing people to the Moore membership, we have a Moore membership section, a page. So we've got a little video that appears here, which will show you about what benefits the Moore membership has, what packages are available. And then we're encouraging people to join now. If they're going to join now, they'll go off to the Legend system, which is where you can do all of that online. But we're giving them all of the information up front with the aim that there'll be the call to action to join now. They'll be fully informed about what they're joining before they click. So I'm just going to go into the business section now, obviously another key area for the council. So within this section, again, we can tailor all of the content to ensure that we're just serving content that's relevant for someone who's wanting information about business. Supporting businesses, so we have a section here about your Go For It programme and also the other business initiatives that are running within the area. So if I just click on to the Go For It programme, you'll see how it's a similar sort of landing page to the Moore membership. You have the opportunity to have video content there. You have the option to send someone off to another website for more information. And then we have information about the programme. And we can also introduce a little bit of more information about who your business advisor would be. So actually putting a face to a name and allowing people to say, oh, lads, I'm going to go and meet Sinead, and she's in charge of she's an economic development officer. So we have lots of scalability in the business section. Within some of the other areas, there's a forms to apply online. So I'll just quickly show you an example. So in the Optimal programme, we've included an online form here, so you can actually apply for that online. So we're fully digitalising the entire process of what you can action yourself on the website. Another key area is your events and news. Obviously you run quite a lot of events and there's lots of things happening in the borough that we want to tell all the residents about. So we have a really nice new events section, which you can go in to find out more information about your event and to book directly to your event as well. We are, alongside this corporate website, working on a tourism visitor website, and the great benefit that we have is any piece of information that we tag as tourism, when we put it into the corporate site, will automatically go into the tourism site. So it's just a really nice way of synchronising and making sure that we're utilising all our resources. The new section is just a slightly different layout and allows the ability for all of the news items and press releases to be displayed on the site as well. So I'm just going to nip in back into the council section, just show you the councillor section. So what we have developed in this area is we have split out all of the councillors by your DEA, and then any user can go in, and if they know their area, they can just click on it and see who their councillor is, and they can get the straight into the contact details for that. One of the last areas I would like to show you is our accessibility options. Obviously, we need to ensure that we are providing a service that's accessible to all. So we have the option here to increase the text size on the site. We also have the option to view the site in grayscale and also in high contrast. So you'll see there how those different options work. And if I just click through the site, you can see the impact that that has. It stays across the site. So again, in line with your corporate objectives of being accessible. Yeah, I'm just going to show you how it looks on a mobile. So you can see here how everything just concertinas. We just refine all of the content so that it's nicely displayed. The main menu turns into what we call a burger menu. So you can still access all the main areas of the site. We're still keeping it very search-led. Again, your bin schedule at the fore, your important notices, and straight into your information. So I can navigate away into all the different sections here, for example. Into dog licensing, there I am. So you can see all the information there and how it looks on a mobile. So we have been making sure that that's fully covered off. Yep.
Just quickly wanted to give you an idea of some of the comparative pages so you can see the difference with some of this. So this is the current website and this is the new website homepage. So you can see it's a lot less busy. It's search driven and all the information's in one place. So it's a lot easier to find your way around. This is an example of the old business page versus the new business page. Again, all the information is in one place. It's personalised. With the various different officers' contact details in, and it's very much focused on developing the business, particularly the new starts. This is the bin checker, so you can see the old bin checker versus the new bin checker. So it's just a reminder of the difference on the visuals. The old events page versus the new events page. Now Graham's just going to talk us through how this now links into the Citizen app.
Okay, thank you. Hopefully members will recall a demo of the Citizen Hub back in October in the corporate workshop. And I suppose I just wanted to highlight, you know, how, although it's two separate projects, how the app and the website link. There's a number of areas where the app is going to take content out of the website. As you'll have heard, there's considerable effort going into creating that the content, making sure it's right, and tagging it in the appropriate way. So it would probably be foolish to ignore all that work. So we plan to actually pull that information into the app. So things like councillors' details, the bin checker information, waste recycling, events and news, that will all be the content will all be shared between the app and the website. So that not only creates consistency across both platforms, but also means it only has to be maintained at one source, which will save considerable effort. I suppose on the flip side of that, we want to highlight some of the unique features that the app brings. So there are a number of them, but a few of the sort of the ones that stand out is the ability to have the digital membership card for leisure in your pocket, live status updates. So whenever you put a request for service on through the app, you'll actually be able to get an instant update as to what the status is of that request. And also things like we've seen in the website where we have these maps and show all the things within a certain area. This sort of takes it to the next level. It will show you the services in your current location. So using the GPS technology in your mobile device, it will actually change depending on your location. And that GPS technology will be used in other places throughout the app to get things like driving directions to our facilities and things like that. And also not forgetting the ability to push notifications out to users. So it's another means of communicating with people. And I suppose it's worth saying that although we haven't actually released the first version of this app, we're already thinking of what's coming in the future. So there's going to be more development done around leisure and enhancing the booking process. And as Legend develops further and more their technology improves, we plan to feed that directly into the app to make sure that's a process as possible for the user. And also alerting, we saw on the website there that we had the ability to put this alert up on the website. We're going to look at a way of, once it goes up on the website, it automatically sends a push notification. And so just looking how we can link the two systems up in a much better way. Also looking at voice control, many of us may have the little boxes that sit in our house that we talk to and ask questions of, like Alexa and all that sort of stuff. So it's looking how we can start using that technology so that users can actually start asking questions using their voice, so they don't actually need to touch any devices at all. And also members will be aware of the digital platform that went through council just before Christmas. So just to reassure you that any new online service that comes through that digital platform will ultimately end up in the website and on the app. So it's going to be available across all our platforms. So I think Nicola's going to just run through the time scales, hopefully, maybe not.
We have a technical issue.
Wing it.
Apologies for that. We have a slight technical issue there. And now the computer has just given up altogether, I think. Just to give you a quick overview of the time frame. So we actually have had the website from the 13th of December, and we've been working on actually populating live content since then. So Catherine and the team have been diligently working through all of that. We would anticipate that to continue until the 14th of January, and then it'll be really tidying up and testing it. There is some test data that has been released already to the Citizens app, so we are working on those as well. Very last slide. Okay. It's froze, is it? Sorry, I'll just keep going with the dates. So today's presentation to the members, 8th of January, and then the website, we're planning to go live on the 30th of January. So that's at the end of this month. So it's midweek, so if there are any glitches, we have a few days to work them out, but let's hope that will be well planned and tested at that stage. So we don't anticipate any of that happening. We're well on schedule for that to happen, and the app then will continue on testing for a period of time after that to make sure that all that information that Graham was referring to was being fed through to the app and it's appearing to the customers and the residents in the way that it should do. So there'll be a couple of weeks of that happening, and we'll be ready to go live pretty much at the end of February. What we'd like to do is to come back to the committee on the 5th of March, present the live app to you, get everyone to download it onto their phones so that the committee will be the first to have it and the first to use it, and we'll be here to help you with that. And then pretty much would go live after that. So we'll be into a promotional campaign to encourage our residents to start downloading it. And our focus will be very much about pushing people onto the app so that they'll use the functionality as well as the enhanced website. So we're happy to take any questions if you have any queries. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicola. Catherine Graham, that was very informative. Thank you. Technology is great when it works, isn't it? Councillor Hollis, a couple of speakers, and then Councillor Hollis.
I was going to ask when this magical thing will come about. I thought maybe it was on it now. I have not a clue what you're talking about. Not one bit. You may as well talk on Ulster, Scots or Irish. It just doesn't work with me. I've just found out the other day that along the top there's a wee button and you press it and there's a calendar of everything comes up on it. It took me nearly 5 years to find that. And I've been to all sorts of lessons. If somebody phones me and says about their bin, I'll say, has next door their bin out? No, then don't put yours out. That's quicker than this here. But how this is ever going to work, I do not know. It'll not work for me. I'm too old for it, and I don't need it. I can deal with matters that people phone me about and do the other things. And what do you call your woman, Alexa? It gets me into trouble. Because when my grandchildren and others are playing it, I call up a special wee tune and they go back mad over it. Granda, turn that off. That's terrible. So that's the only thing I know about it. And she tells you what time it is in the morning. So for me, somebody better sort something else out.
Thank you. Councillor Webb.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, first of all, could I take the opportunity to welcome Councillor Wilson to the Chamber and wish him all the very best for his period in Council. I'd like to also thank for the presentation today. I think this is, despite what Councillor Hollis said, I think this is quite an exciting move. I must say I'm very impressed with what I've seen this evening. But I'm wondering if our current online applications will migrate to the new system as they are. Because today I had to go on to the building control site and complete an application. And I did send a message through afterwards to say it was the most unfriendly application ever. Some of the information on it was quite wrong, where it says to select from the menu below, when in fact the menu was on the left-hand side. And then when I went in to pay the £72 and clicked on the credit card below, I went into their website. And it was a long time before I realised you are actually supposed to treat it as if you've paid and click pay, and then it brings you in to pay. So there are lots of things on our online forms that I'm concerned that they're just going to migrate across. So are they, or will they be looked at as well?
To the Chair, certainly the building control one, the site, the actual application system you were on was a third party, it was a Tascomi system. But that's still not taking anything away from that. Actually, we will actually be looking at a new version of that software very, very soon as part of a look at all of our processes. So hopefully you're quite correct. It's very cumbersome and almost quite confusing, that process. So that will be looked at. Also, as part of when we're looking at the digital platform that I mentioned, we'll be looking in quite a lot of detail at all of our online services. While some of them may be migrated as they are, some of those third-party ones we have limited control over. Some of them we are looking at. It's very much a process of taking each service and seeing how the changes and improvements can be made. So while I say it may not be perfect from day one, it's certainly something we will be looking at across the board.
Thank you. Councillor Bingham.
Thank you, Chair. It's regarding the map, which seems to show most of County Antrim. Could we not have a borough map rather than the one big one and have more details of it on it?
We're working with Andrea Richardson and Performance Transformation Section on ArcGIS maps, which will be very specific. The map that we saw there will cover the whole of the borough, and we'll have it'll have all of the sort of tick boxes on it for the various different elements, so council facilities, play parks, and then you'll be able to untick that. So on the various different pages within the website, there will be different maps for different areas. So when you're in the DEAs, there'll be only the DEA map. So we can fine tune that. So we have a combination of maps that come from Andrea, and we have some maps that would be from Google, which are the sorts of things that you would get on your phone if you put in a search for a particular place. If you put in Antrim Civic Centre, and it would pop up just in sort of smaller scale and much more in proportion. So those maps will be placed on it. So we're working on those at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Maguire.
Yep. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Can I just ask a general comment? You didn't go into it, the community funding and grants forms online. Now, I've had comments from residents, from sports groups, community groups, that that is difficult. Now, are they still the same forms, or has there been, or will there be, a change to them to make them more user-friendly for the likes of community grants, or community schemes, and or sports schemes? Thank you.
Through the chair. Unfortunately, it's a third-party system. It's a wee bit like the planning and the building control system. The website links out to the grant manager, and it's actually all built on grant manager. So that is a third-party system that is managed by community services. So we would need to have a look at that as a separate project at this stage. Up until that stage, we can give information on the website, and that can all be user-friendly, but the actual collating of all of the information is on a third-party site. So unfortunately, we have very little influence on that at the moment, but we can certainly look at it for the future.
Okay, thank you. And Councillor McClellan.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I think anything that brings us into the 21st century is wonderful and very innovative. I have to say it does look very user-friendly. And if we're having 50,000 hits per month, I mean, hopefully we can increase on that. But I hadn't realised we were getting as many as that, so that's excellent. I just wanted to ask with regard to an app. We do Report All is an app that is on a different one, obviously not your own. Is there any way of incorporating that at some stage into this? Because it's one of the things residents are continually asking about this, you know, because I'm not sure how Report All works, but people keep coming back to me and saying they're not getting the response that they expect from it.
Absolutely. The plan is that we would phase out Report All, and the citizen app would be that way of raising issues, and there will be that the same functionality, in fact hopefully improved functionality, which will automatically go into a back-end system, so there's not the same issue of that information potentially being lost. So yes, the Report All functionality, it should be in, well, it's not should, it will be in the app and is in the app, and that will be the way we would hopefully push the residents into communicating with us.
Hopefully that will double the numbers of hits we get.
Okay, if we're all satisfied, members, any other questions or comments? Councillor Wilson.
Yep, thanks very much for the presentation. Just a question around the app. It says on about the digital membership card, I presume that's the MOWER scheme. Does it contain, I suppose, more than one barcode, or is it essentially one, in terms of one app, per barcode? Or do you need a squadron of your kids having mobile phones showing up as well?
Through the chair, at the minute it is one per barcode, but certainly we will happily look at, I fully appreciate that there's family memberships involved, and there may be the need to have more than one there, and I've actually raised that with the developers, so that's certainly something we will look at. I say future development, the future development will be very shortly after this current development, and so happy to look at that.
Okay, members, everybody happy enough? Okay, so thanks again for your time and presentation. It was much appreciated. Thank you. Okay, members, so moving on to items for decision. Item 4.1 is the Local Government Finance Act. Now, we're going to do this section by section, but I'm going to bring the director in, and then we can work our way through this.
Thank you, Chair. So traditionally, at the January Policy and Governance Committee, we bring a raft of reports to committee on the outworking of the Local Government Act. and this is linked to the rates estimate process. So all of these reports have been circulated with your agenda. The Local Government Act gives more freedom to local authorities in terms of their finances, but it also places more responsibility on council, the chief financial officer and elected members in terms of the financial statements and the sustainability of the finances within council. The affordability of projects for council, both capital and revenue projects, and the robustness of the plans of council linked in with the corporate plan. So similar to last year, there are a number of reports for elected members to either note or approve. It is necessary in some cases that these are technical because, to a certain degree, but they have been written so that they can be as understandable as possible. There are five elements to the Act that we need to review this evening and ensure that we're complying with that. I'm not going to go through each one of them in detail, but just highlight the elements within the report that you as elected members need to be aware of, and then happy to take any questions through the chair. As I say, some of them are for approval and some of them are for agreement to note. So the first report then is the minimum revenue provision policy 1920. And essentially, that policy is to ensure that the ratepayers of today pay for the benefit of the assets that are enjoyed today, and that we don't leave that liability for the ratepayers of tomorrow. So we are required to charge our general fund with an amount in respect of the financing of capital expenditure. And as you know, capital expenditure tends to be for a longer period, normally greater than a year, and it's dependent on the size of the project, the lifetime that is given to that. For example, normally vehicles will be 7 years, IT equipment 4 years, facilities 25 years. So the MRP charge that we put must have a sound accounting basis and be prudent, but the Act itself doesn't say what prudent is. So it's up to councils in association with SIPFA to determine that. The policy on page 8 sets out the options that are available for council. So we have two options, the asset life method or the depreciation method. And as in previous years, the council is continuing to use the asset life method. And we have within that two options, either equal instalments or annuities. And dependent on the project, the council will decide at a point in time which one of those options to use. Just to note that the MRP commences in the year after the asset becomes operational, and the asset life that is determined is normally in line with our depreciation policy. So the MRP that's been calculated according to our policy is 5.8 million for 2019-20, and that's shown on page 10 of the report. And that has been included within our estimates process that we'll be discussing later on in the agenda at agenda item 5.1. So, Chair, happy to take any questions in relation to the MRP policy, and it's for approval of the committee.
Okay, thank you, Sandra. Are there any, Councillor Webb?
Chair, could I just seek clarification that the policies that we're going to look at, this one and then the ones that are following, the policies themselves haven't been changed. If they have, subsequent to this one, if that could be identified. So in fact, what we're looking at is the calculation within the policy, which obviously the figure is different. So it's purely the figure that we're approving, and not any change in policy.
Any other comments, or is there a proposer or a seconder?
I propose.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Thank you. Okay, members. Right, Sam, are you happy to move on? Yeah.
The medium-term financial plan then for council is the next document within this section. Council are required to take a longer-term view of our finances to ensure that there's longer-term sustainability of our finances, and that the ratepayers don't experience large peaks and troughs in terms of the requirement for funds. So the plan looks at the projected finances for council going forward, and looks at the necessary
uses necessary forecasts and assumptions in doing that, and those are laid out within the report. So I'm not going to take you through those assumptions, but just to say that in terms of the projections, moving from 1920 to 2021, we would project a 2.94% increase in our net cost of services, and from 2021 to 21-22, we would project a 2.42% increase in our net cost of services, based on the assumptions that are laid out within the report. And just to say that those assumptions are made based on the best information and expertise that we have available to us at this point in time, and they are subject to change. So again, Chair, happy to take any questions and the reports to be noted.
Okay, thank you, Sandra. So there's a recommendation there that the report is noted. Any questions or proposer or seconder? Councillor Hamill.
Move it be noted, Chair.
Thank you.
Second it.
Thank you. Moving on then.
Report number C then is the Treasury Management Policy of Council. It sets out the Council strategy for managing capital finance functions according to the SIPFA Code of Practice. It includes a strategy for managing our investments and also looks at our borrowings. It takes into account all of our investments, our cash flows and the capital transactions to ensure that the corporate objectives of the Council are met. In broad terms, we want to ensure that our borrowing is affordable, sustainable and prudent, and that in terms of investments, our priority is to ensure the security of Council's money, and then thereafter we would look at liquidity and yield in terms of any investments that we make. So the strategy, the Treasury Management Strategy, is laid out on pages 6 to 10. It's linked to our medium-term financial strategy and takes into account what our predictions are linked to our Treasury Management Advisor in terms of what interest rates are going to be at in 2019. It looks at what the predictions are for economic growth. In terms of the borrowing approach, it's dealt with on pages 8 to 10 and looks at our objective in terms of low risk and cost certainty for any borrowings that Council have. In terms of the strategy, as I said, the priority there for Council is to ensure that Council's money is secure. And we lay out within the report the categories investment that Council are able to use. In terms of institutions that we invest in, we ask for a minimum of a UK institution of a BBB plus institution. And then we lay out limits in terms of investments that Council has. There are three indicators, and they're shown on pages 19 to 22 of the report, that set out indicators for interest rate exposure. And the limit that we set there is £25,000 in terms of either a 1% rise or 1% fall in interest rates. We also set limits on page 21 in relation to maturity of borrowings, and that's to ensure that all of our borrowings do not mature at the same time. And then within limits for sums invested, we limit the amount that we can invest in particular institutions, and you will see within that that we are reducing the amount that we invest for greater than a year from 2.5 million down to 0.5 million. So the appendix from page 23 to 31 is the Treasury Management Practices, and those are the same as previous years. So therefore, I'm not going to go into those, but happy to take any questions, and this report is for approval.
Okay, members. Oh, Councillor Goodman.
Thank you. Thanks for the report, Sandra. On section 3, I think it's on page 9, additional capital finance, where it may be raised from. There's a note there around that we may use private finance initiatives. I mean, I think there's been a lot of concern across the water about the value for money and suitability of PFI initiatives. A lot of issues with, you know, in Scotland, particularly with PFI school councils in Scotland, but using PFI to build schools, and then, you know, the cost and so on. Could you explain why that that's there for us, and whether it's really necessary for us to continue to have that option.
Well, I suppose, I mean, it's within the policy that we would be able to do that if Council so choose to do it. We do not have any PFI initiatives currently at this point in time, and obviously if we were going to use that particular route to develop a capital project, that would be brought before elected members before we would actually go down that route. And certainly there would be certainly be a lot of conversations before we would start to use that particular part of the policy, but I suppose it does give us the ability to do that if we so chose.
I mean, I understand that it gives us the ability to do it, but I'm just, I mean, wondering why we continue to have it there if we know that there are all sorts of problems associated with it, why we would want to continue to have that ability. I mean, it just seems to me that it's presenting us with potentially an option that is going to cause us more grief than good in the future, and I'm not really sure what the benefit of having the opportunity for PFI in there is what I'm trying to get at. And you know, so do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, certainly, as I say, most of these documents have been brought forward from previous years, and I haven't, you know, changed that particular element of it. I mean, if it's the elected member's view that we remove that from the policy, that is something that we can do, if that's the view. I suppose it just means that we have that option available to us if we so choose to do that.
Any other comments, members, or a proposer or a seconder? And a seconder, shall we say?
So propose.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Thank you.
So then report number D is the report of the Chief Financial Officer on the robustness of estimates and adequacy of reserves. Again, this is a requirement of the Finance Act. So pages 1 to 4 deal with the robustness of the estimates. I suppose it's to give assurance to elected members that there has been a proper process around the estimates process, and that decisions are made based on evidence. So we deal within that section on salaries and wages, supplies and services, the loans and the MRP costs that we have talked about, and then income and capital costs. We move on then to reserves within the report and the adequacy of those reserves. At March 2018, we held £7 million of reserves, and we potentially will use £700,000 of reserves within our 1920 rates estimate process. However, that will still mean that we are within the reserves policy of Council. So again, happy to take questions on that, and this report is for noting.
Okay, thanks, Sandra. Hey, members, Councillor Maguire.
Yep. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Sandra, for that. Can I just ask you a quick question about it's page 77, which is probably page 5, on reserves. Paragraph 14, the Council held £7 million in its general fund at 1st April 2018. At the corporate workshop, we were given a schedule of the reserves position. And the balance at 31st of March 2018 was 7.89 million. And then there were the three other reserves on top of that. So is it not the case that the actual reserves, both the general reserve of 7.89 and the other reserves, is over £10 million? It's just a question, because again, 7.89 is very clear in from the corporate workshop, whereas that seems to say it was only £7 million. Perhaps you need to come back on that.
We'll come back to you with those, Councillor Maguire. Is that okay?
Please, okay.
Have enough?
Thank you.
Are you proposing it's noted, Councillor Maguire?
I'm happy, yes, if there's no clerical errors, then we do note that.
Okay. Is there a seconder?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, members, happy enough to move.
The last item in this section then is the capital strategy, and this is a new report for this financial year. So it provides an overview of the long-term context of capital expenditure and investment decisions in Council. It talks about how the capital strategy and expenditure is managed in terms of sustainability in relation to finances of council. It sets out the criteria for capital expenditure and outlines the spend £10.7 million in 1920. And then Table 1 shows the forecast for the 3 years under consideration. The report outlines the governance approvals that are in place in relation to capital expenditure and outlines how we follow the Northern Ireland Guide for Economic Appraisals, and we also follow then a project management approach in terms of capital expenditure. The financing then of capital expenditure is shown on Table 2, MRP is shown on Table 3, and the capital financing requirement in Table 4. And just a reminder that the MRP is the balances that we need to set aside in our revenue budgets for to finance capital, and the capital financing requirement is the cumulative outstanding amount of debt finance in our balance sheet. Borrowings of council are outlined, £51.2 million, and the average rate historically has been 5.6%, and we have investments historically there of £1.3 million with an average interest rate of 0.49%. Table 6 indicates then that the council is working within the capital financing requirement of council. And Table 7 shows that the Council has worked within the authorised limit for debt. So those are positive indicators for elected members. The report then goes on to talk about the levels of investment and security being the primary focus, as we have already outlined. Table 9 shows the key affordability ratio for a council. So this is the ratio of affordability of our capital expenditure. The ratio is rises slightly in 1920, 2021, but reduces back in 21, 22, and provides assurance that the capital programme is prudent, affordable and sustainable. So the report provides assurance that there are checks and balances in place, that the capital programme is aligned with our corporate objectives, and that funding measures are in place, and that the programme is affordable in the long term. So this report is for approval.
Okay,
happy to take questions.
Okay. Any questions? Councillor Goodman.
Thank you. Under the capital programme approvals, would it be possible to get a flowchart there to show how the approvals work, where projects are initiated, how they work through the process, and how, because the list that's given there is not exactly, it's not particularly clear what role and, you know, at what point members get to look at capital projects and approve them, and I mean, and so on, and so how does that happen? Is it possible to have that done?
Certainly a flow chart through the chair can be provided, but you know, all capital projects that are on that list will come before elected members through committees for approval before we would commence the project.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, I know that, but what I'm talking about is not the existing capital projects. I'm talking about in future with how do we identify capital projects? Who initiates that, the process, and where exactly do the various committees and full council come in terms of the approvals? What role has the capital projects group, which is made up of officers, have in terms of determining whether a project is able to be proceeded with? And you know, if that, I mean, because my concern would be that acts as some sort of a filter to prevent projects which have been identified getting to committees and getting to members for decision. So I would want to see what the exact mechanism that's used to get projects from initial identification to approval at full council. And I'm not talking about existing projects, I'm talking about potential projects in future.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other comments and a proposer, members? Councillor Bingham?
No problem.
Thank you. Councillor Maguire?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, happy to second that proposal.
Okay, members, are we all happy to move on? All agreed? Okay, so item 4.2 then. consultation on the introduction of proposed clinical response model. I'm just going to bring the director in again.
Thank you, Chair. So there's a proposal then within your report. There was a consultation document put before or with council. It has been through the senior management team already. The response deadline is the 18th of January. So if we can approve the response tonight, it will be subject to ratification at full council at the end of the month. So there is a proposal to change the model by which responses are given for the ambulance service to give a more clinically appropriate ambulance response. The current response is based solely on a time-based approach, and there is lack of evidence that that gives the most effective outcome for the people who phone the ambulance service. And what they're saying is that the current model doesn't effectively identify sickest patients. So what the proposal is that they would propose a more enhanced call-taking system within the ambulance service so that more accurately identifies the sickest patients, and through that they would hope to be able to tailor their resources better to the requirements. So substantially, the responses for council are within the responses to the six questions that are within your papers. And generally, we are supportive of the route of travel, and we would anticipate that they would provide evidence that at an early stage that the process, the change process, has been effective. And we also make a comment then at the end around that they're required to have some communication with users to ensure that they're reassured about the change process that's going to take place. But happy to take any other comments in relation to the proposed response for council.
Okay, thank you, Sandra. So the recommendation then is that the consultation response is approved. Councillor Webb.
Sure, I'm happy to propose that it be approved, but I was a wee bit confused as to why this fell in under the directorate responding to a health service paper. Is there any particular reason why Sandra's department had to take this on?
Not sure. Just passed by the chief executive. So. Must be. Okay, so you're happy to propose that, Councillor Webb? Is there a seconder?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Happy to second.
Thank you. Members, item 4.3 then. The timetable is before you for the production of the corporate plan and corporate improvement plan. And there's a recommendation that it's approved.
Approved.
Second, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. During December, all the constituent committees had detailed reports in relation to their services tabled at their committees, and had the opportunity to ask any detailed questions on the specific costs and incomes within those areas. So attached to your paper tonight is the movement on a corporate basis since our last Policy and Governance Committee on the 4th of December, incorporating any changes that have come about since that time. There is also then a new increased estimated penny product, and that's based on the second and final draft that we have received from Land and Property Services. So there's a total increase there in EPP of 9767. The report also shows a slight increase in the total net cost of services of £63,600, and details of that are shown on the more detailed report. The outworking of this is that we are still looking at a rate increase of 0.99% approximately, and to get that, we are allocating £700,000 out of reserves, as we had already previously outlined. And that still allows Council to work within the reserves policy of 9%, which we had talked about earlier. The rates process is still work in progress. There will be a further opportunity to review the figures if any changes come to light at the Policy and Governance Committee in February. That's on the 5th of February, and that then is prior to rate striking, which will be on the 11th of February. So happy to take any questions, Chair, and it's for noting.
Okay, thank you.
Just a comment, Chair, to congratulate staff for taking on board the issues that we raised and being able to keep the potential increase down to 0.99%. You mentioned still review, and we still have 4 weeks before we set the rate. So is there any likelihood that there's going to be any massive change, either up or down in that, Sandra?
Through Chair, no, we don't anticipate any change. It would only be if there was something come to light from left field that we haven't already seen. So I don't foresee there to be substantial change.
Happy to propose.
Seconded.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, Sandra, for that. Two points that we could make. There's been a worsening of our position by £243,600, as you've shown us, between December and January. Yet that hasn't affected the increase to rate payers of 0.99%. Now, is that just rounding that it hasn't? Or maybe it's from 0.987 to 0.988 or something? Because otherwise, that's £250,000 of a difference, which has made no difference to the percentage increase. First question. The second question is you've taken 700,000 from reserves to get that figure. Again, from previous discussion on reserves, there's a lot more that we could take from reserves to reduce that to 0% on the 11th of February. And that's certainly something I would be recommending in February. So just those two points, please.
Do you want to come back, Sandra?
Through the Chair, the first point, so the change in the cost of services is a netting off. There were some increases in cost, but there were also some savings were found also in services. So the net of those two is £63,600. In terms of reserves, yes, we're taking 700,000, or potentially taking 700,000 from reserves, and it does leave Council with reserves in excess of the policy that was set. However, I think we need to be mindful of a longer term approach in terms of our rates estimate, and there are uncertainties out there that may result in Council needing to find additional funding. The likes of Brexit, for instance, we don't know just exactly how that's going to impact on Council. And I suppose I think it would be prudent for a Council to ensure that we are equipped to deal with any uncertainties going forward.
Okay. Yeah.
Chair, can I come back? Sorry about that. Thanks for that, Sandy. You mentioned the 63,600. The actual change is 243,600 over the last month. That's £250,000. And yet that change has not affected the net increase. It's still not 0.99%. So it's actually a change of 243,000, not 63,000.
The estimated penny product of Council has also increased. So that means that even with that increased cost, because our estimated penny product has increased, it has allowed us to bear that increase, but not actually increase our rate. So if you see beneath the line, the estimated gross penny product rate has increased from 1,890,020 to 1,898,800. And then the derated has also increased. So the effect of those means that the actual rate has not changed.
Are you happy enough? Thank you. Are we all agreed to move on, members? Yep. Okay. Item 5.2 then is the agency staff update. There is a recommendation that the report be noted. Councillor Ringham.
Could I ask, Chair, seasonal workers have increased from 4 to 21. Is there any explanation for why that would be?
I can double check for you, Councillor Bingham, but I suspect that this year we have more than the previous year as at the end of November because of the programme of work that Ivor, the head of service, has with the team. I know there's a fairly significant piece of work even on the roundabouts alone. I suspect that the seasonal workers have been helping on that piece of work, but I can double check that and clarify it for you.
Okay, do we have a, Councillor Wilson.
Thanks, Chair. Just reading the report, note that some of the reasons given for the use of agency staff, a lot of them have long lead-in times, such as maternity, shared parental leave, career breaks, and secondments. It's, I suppose, something the council would have had ample opportunity or time to recruit directly to the council. And I'm concerned that ratepayers' money is being spent on lining the pockets of multinational agencies.
Yeah, sure. Yes, Councillor Wilson, I understand the concern that you've expressed. It's actually something that members have raised at committee in the past. What I would say is that there are a number of vacancies that we're carrying through maternity, secondment, as you have noted, and also through the restructuring exercise that we're, we've worked our way through, arising from the merger of the two councils. So there's a balance of the resources that we have within HR in terms of, you know, which posts we prioritise in terms of recruitment, and there's a fairly extensive list to get through. So there is a combination of direct recruitment and then going to agency, and that depends sometimes on the timelines for secondments. At times they can be short, for example. To reassure you, and maybe I could forward the report to you, we did actually have a look at the cost of recruiting staff directly versus the cost of recruiting staff via a recruitment agency. So, for example, if we go to a recruitment agency, we would pay the same rate of pay had we employed someone directly, and there would be an agency cost attached to them providing that service for us. But what we wouldn't be paying as an employer is the employer costs. When you tally them all up, equals something like 30% or thereabouts. Pension alone is about 19%. So we did do an analysis on the point that you've made, and if it helps, what I could do is forward that report to you, just to show you the difference of the cost, direct recruitment versus agency. It certainly would have overall been in the council's favour, as it is and as it is working. So it wasn't as alarming as I know that members had worried about in the past when it was raised.
Oh, and I appreciate in terms of the answer. I suppose it's providing local residents with secure employment. Not here today, gone tomorrow, agency type contracts. And I note essentially that they may be have a less of a cost as such, but the saving, I suppose that saving is that the agency, the multinational agencies, make a profit as a result of, suppose, our local residents who are doing work for our, around our areas, that they're left without likes of a pension as such. And I note that, look, a number of these, there is a time and a place for agencies, but in the likes of maternity cover and career breaks and them types of examples, you know, there's ample opportunity there to employ people and give people secure employment, and that's just my thoughts on it.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Do we have a proposer? Sorry, Councillor McGill, very remiss of me, you wanted to speak.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, it's just a question in respect of when it's deemed necessary to bring the agency staff in and then we go out to those agencies. Do we have any role with regard to criteria at that stage, or are we left is that left to the agency? I'm just sort of thinking from year to year at times there's maybe a change on the calibre, etc., of who we're getting for certain roles, and I was just wondering, do we have any say when it comes to that, to allocating agency staff to those roles?
Yes, through you, Chair. We would have Councillor McGill. So The job specification would be reviewed before we go to the agency, and if there's any change, we would do that before we would secure someone. So typically, the HR department would review the job specification with the line manager, and after that, issue it to the agencies, and there would be an essential and desirable criteria to make sure that the council gets the skills, the knowledge, experience that would be required for a role. So it is something that's kept under review before it would go to issue.
Thank you. Councillor McGuire.
Yep. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Andrea, for coming in there. Just for Ryan's point of view, the question of agency costs has been raised over the last, what, probably since the last council started in 2014. And Andrea has, in the past, provided a great deal of background to members on how those costs have been, how they've been so expensive, really. No, it's between £1 to £2 million a year. So it is a high item of expenditure. It is tightly controlled, we are assured, by HR. And Andrea has gone through the detail. In fact, it was only last month, I think, Andrea, that she produced a massive schedule, which is offered to yourself, Ryan, because obviously you're new to this. But no, there is intense scrutiny on whether or not even one extra agency staff is appointed and how that person is selected and is appointed. And at the end of the day, the decision seems to be it is more economical to use agency staff short term than it is to go to the process of trying to employ somebody on a long term basis. And you're right, multinational agencies do charge us a premium of anything between 20% and 40%, but that still seems to be a better balance for us to use that for short term only, but only for short term employment purposes. So I hope that pops gives a bit more clarification. Thank you, but I'm happy to either propose or second the report.
Can I just add, I mean, I know that we go over this every time it comes up. So every time it's on, and it is on the agenda every month, but would maybe help if we could get an idea of the length of time it takes, or an average length of time it takes to recruit someone, because if you're looking at this, if the you're looking at the you know 32 this time last year and there's still 26, it creates an impression that obviously they're not the same 32 positions, or 26 of the 32 from last year. There's been a turnover and there's a change, but it's hard to see what that is or how quickly that is changing, and it's also hard to get a sense of whether or not our staff are starting to settle down and we're not turning over staff as quickly as we might have been in the first 3 or 4 years of the council, which caused the whole, there's all sorts of problems with recruitment and agency staff, and to get an idea of what the trend is and when we can maybe expect to see and what level of recruitment ongoing we're going to need to see, month to month. Is that possible to do?
Through you, Chair. Yes, it would be, Councillor Goodman. I think it's a fair enough point. I can certainly do a report for members to do an update on those points that you've touched on. To give some reassurance, members, we have just recently, actually, because it's a valid point in terms of the time to recruit, and the HR team has a KPI around the length of time that it does take to recruit from the time the form lands on their desk to go to recruit, and they have targets themselves to improve that, and one of the things that was key to that was actually going digital and paperless, with the process. So they've actually made improvements there and gone live with an initiative that they have, but I can certainly do an update report for members. And maybe also, if I could mention again, members, that in terms of as a council compared to others in Northern Ireland and the cost of agency spend, the audit report did an analysis of that, and from memory on the table, out of the 11 councils, we were, I think it was fifth or sixth, the lowest, actually, so we're about mid-table in terms of the cost of agency spend through that period of change post-merge. So we're about mid-table compared to all other councils. But yes, I can do that report.
Okay, members, so we need a second.
You need a seconder?
I'm happy to second.
Thank you, Councillor Goodman. All agreed? Okay, item 5.5, then, Equality and Accessibility Promotion Plan. I'm going to bring the director in.
Thank you, Chair. Members, this is really an update in relation to all that the Council does to not only fill its statutory obligations in relation to disability, but to exceed them. Our elected members have been so supportive in progressing a number of programmes to make sure that the Council services on all fronts would remain accessible to our residents and visitors alike. What we wanted to do was do a better job of actually promoting what the Council does, and the attached appendix really outlines an annual plan to make sure that we do a better job of that. So, for example, throughout the year and on a quarterly basis, there'd be scheduled posts, promotion, advertising of the raft of things that are available within leisure. By way of example, we have our pool pods in the leisure centres, the Little Stars swimming programmes for the young ones who have additional needs. We have our outdoor play facilities, including the accessible wheelchair swings. We have our disability sports hubs at the various leisure centres. We have our wheelie active clubs and our accessible golf, which is the only one of its kind in Northern Ireland. In fact, the wheelie active and the golf are the best performing initiatives of that type in leisure in Northern Ireland. So we want to promote that and advertise it and attract even more people to it. We want to promote our arts and theatre offerings. We have our relaxed performances and the sound performances. And then general services in terms of the JAM card and the autism impact and award and the training that the officers now have. And we're going to develop the dementia-friendly borough. I know that was something Councillor McLennan had proposed at the last meeting. And also the small things, but that they're important too in terms of the Council website and the different features on that website. You would have seen some of the even better ones this evening. So it's just to make a better job of promoting that throughout the year and beyond.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Okay, members, there's a recommendation that the plan is noted.
I move the recommendation, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor McGill.
Seconded, Chair.
All agreed. Councillor.
Chair, one thing that I don't see in it is any reference to disability accessible allotments. And I know we're driving forward allotments, and we know the benefits to health in relation to those, but I'm not convinced we're actually taking on board accessibility for those who are disabled.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that, Councillor Webb. Okay, thank you. Okay, members, item 5.4 then is the Special School Summer Scheme funding feedback. There's a report to be noted, but we're just going to bring the director in.
Thank you, Chair. So, members, this was just to share with you what the schools wanted to tell us about the support that the Council gave to make sure that, again, they had or their pupils had access to the summer scheme programmes throughout the borough. We had five special schools in Antrim and Newton Abbey. Three applied for the funding. That was Hillcroft, Jordanstown and Riverside. Rustulla and Thornfield didn't feel that it was something that would suit their pupils because most of their pupils board and so they just go home then during the summer months. And for now it wasn't something that they felt was viable for them. But there's a summary of some of the points from the feedback. Some of it relates to the breadth of activities that the £5,000 was able to bring to their programmes. Also taking the pupils further afield, increasing the number of places they were able to offer during the summer. And importantly, respite for the families. You know, like any family that would send their child to a summer scheme, it is lovely to have that time, for yourself when you need it. So it's very positive feedback. They were very grateful to the council and expressed an interest in funding for the future for similar repeat of the programme.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Councillor Goodman.
Thank you, Chair. I'd be happy to propose the report be noted for the check the recommendation, but I'm happy to propose it be noted. But a couple of points. Can you just confirm that the funding for this project came through DEA funding, isn't that right? Initially? No? Did we?
Through you, Chair. Initially, the conversation, I think, started from the DEAs, and then it was just a report to committee or council. I can't remember exactly
I wasn't sure whether it had stayed with the DEA fund, but if it was, I was just going to suggest that we do find a more mainstream funding stream for it, because, I mean, it's obviously been a massive success. So, okay. Thank you.
Councillor Webb.
Chair, my understanding is that it actually started because there was a parent or parents who had complained that our summer schemes, they couldn't let their children make use of them. And I think it might have been discussed at the DEA forums, but it certainly wasn't out of the DEA funding.
Do we have a seconder, members? Thank you. Councillor.
Move the recommendation, Chair.
Move the carbon.
Jim. Thank you. All agreed? Okay, so can we have a proposer and seconder to take the remainder of council business in committee, please?
So proposed.
Thank you, Councillor McGill. Councillor Webb, thank you. Thank you, members. We will now move into committee and the audio recording will cease at this point. So can we have a proposer and seconder to move out of committee, please?
So proposed.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Okay, thank you, members. The audio recording will now restart. So item number 7 then, is there any other relevant business? No? Okay. Thank you, members. That draws to close the Policy and Governance Committee meeting of Antrim Newton Abbey Borough Council on Tuesday the 8th of January 2019. Please make sure your microphones are switched off.